The following podcast is an Embassy Row production.
Small ball in the house. Adam, introduce yourself to the people.
How you doing? I'm Adam Newhouse. I work as director development for ESPN Films and primarily 30 for 30.
Nice. Oh, I'm so addicted to 30 for 30, first of all. When did you start over there? When did you come into the...
Yeah, so I've been there about 5 years. Basically, when I got there, 4 months later, they won the Oscar for OJ. So, you know, no bar right there.
Right, oh, that's right. People forget how much opportunity that OJ brought to people, other than the killing. He employed a lot of people.
You know, he's created a cottage industry, no doubt. And we have two of them. We have the eight-parter, and then we have another film as well. So we participated heavily in that OJ story.
So OJ, that murder, actually won Oscars and Emmys.
It's on its way. We just need a play. We need a Grammy. EGOT.
EGOT, yes. So what was the first 30 for 30 you worked on when you got there?
Well, you know, it's kind of a lag time of a year and a half, 2 years, you know.
Okay. So
a lot of my first couple of years was kind of landing the plane on several films that were already in the mix. But really, you know, when we talk about like a full slate, you know, we can kind of just go back to last fall and start with like the Rodman doc, you know, and this kind of.
Oh, so good. So good. First of all, Dennis Rodman looked like he was the same age his whole life. When they showed the picture of him when he got arrested as a little boy and he was crying, he still looked like he was 36 years old.
It's crazy about that story. There's like a bunch of little stats in there that you kind of like he had like a 9-inch, you know, growth spurt when he was like 22.
Unbelievable. How does that happen?
And then, you know, he was drafted when he was like 25 or 26 into the league. And when you think about now, they look at guys and they're like 20 years old. He's probably peaked, you know.
Yes.
It's crazy when you think about how different the kind of how people evaluate prospects is.
Right. So why is it so different now? Because everybody's trying to get a jump on the prospect. So they just trying to draft them from 11, 12 years old.
You know, all the kind of Moneyball folks, you know, yeah, they're trying to like project about what somebody's going to be when we know that humans don't necessarily like work like an algorithm. Just because somebody's doing well at a certain age doesn't necessarily they're going to be a superstar here. But, you know, they always feel like there's room to kind of grow in that way.
Yeah. Rodman seemed like he was like one of the only NBA players who was kind of a walk-on. He's got like a walk-on energy, even from college, he was at junior college. But the boy was like one of the baddest players of all time. People keep forgetting that because of his antics.
I love seeing that early footage of him at junior college.
Yes.
Oh, and it's like they talk a lot about Zion Williamson and his second jump, how he gets back up before the other person does. And like Rodman's the king of that.
Yes, you know? He got bounced. He got spring in that jump.
That's right. And he like only played at one speed.
One speed. All out all the time.
Yeah, exactly.
That's why Daly loved him. Coach Daly loved him and could understand him and could play him when everybody else would have probably ran away from him.
Yep, that's exactly right.
But people who knew basketball, just like Kobe and Jordan, they was like, this guy can play. I want him on my team.
Well, you know, you always want to play, even when you're playing pickup, you want to play with a guy who can, like, just make everyone better and doesn't need the ball every second. You know?
Yes.
Like, we forget about that sometimes, but, you know, that's... Again, like that's why I love team sports. You know, you got to have everyone playing a role and playing that chemistry role.
Yeah, I'm like that in the orgy. That's how I come off. I don't need all the action. I'm out there just rebounding. I'm out there doing the hustle game.
You're bringing orange juice on the side.
That's right.
You know, wipes. I get it. You need that strong orgy.
You need that, dude. Now, one of my favorite 30 for 30s is definitely the Bird Magic. I mean, that's what gave birth to me. That's when I got into the NBA. That's when I really got in. That was my time when it was Lakers, Celtics, and it meant everything. Where did you stand on that?
Well, you know, the thing about 30 for 30 that I think is great is that it's always a historical series. So we're always aiming like right into everyone's nostalgia, depending on what era and how old you are.
Right.
And the whole idea is that when you're living these things in the moment, you think you remember the story.
Right.
You don't remember shit. Like, you're just like in a river and it's going past you. So, you know, that's one of the things we're always looking for in a story, where it's like, oh, you think you actually remember this, but actually, you know, you don't remember this detail. Now we have this long lens of perspective and context to be able to look at those things differently.
Yes.
The main people who are part of that story can now offer a different take to it. And that happens all the time. And we just did the Michael Vick 30 for 30.
Right, that was a great one too. I watched them all now. I'm addicted to 30 for 30. I'm like, because it definitely shows you another side of the sports world that you don't get to see with just in the, you know, the score. I don't know, did y'all borrow that from like NFL films? Because I know NFL films always had that behind the scenes footage, and we all went wild over it.
You know, the credit really goes to the founders, which was basically Bill Simmons, Connor Schell, and John Dahl, you know, and what they found, which I think helps spur the kind of moment we're at now, which is that people want that type of storytelling with the best documentary filmmakers. Like, for us, you know, you can pitch a story, but that doesn't mean shit. You know, if I were to give you a joke, yeah, you know, even if it's a great joke, it's all about who's delivering that joke. How are That's you true. Executing that? So,
yeah,
you know, for us, like, we spend a lot of time, like, looking at filmmakers. I'm going to film festivals. I'm watching documentaries that have nothing to do with sports, because I'm trying to find the best storytellers. And then I go to them and be like, what's that one sports story you've never been able to get out of your head? You know?
Okay.
The connection with the filmmaker and the story.
Okay. Now, what were like one of the non-sports films that you think influenced you the most?
That's a great question. I thought you were going to say sports films. You know, I mean, I'm just a big film fan, so I watch every year, you know.
You saw Tiger King?
Of course I saw Tiger King.
Yeah. You got
up on everything happening.
And, that was some good storytelling.
Right? OJ was an 8-part series, you know, and we kind of see in the years, you know, last 5 years, you're seeing these multi-part documentaries that really didn't exist beyond kind of Ken Burns style, you know. So we're always trying
Burns
to, like,
wasn't 7 episodes, right? He usually like 2-3 episodes.
That's right. That's right.
Yeah, but he breaks it down into like an hour and a half or something each.
Yeah.
But, okay.
And that's the whole thing, right? Like, why does a story got to be whatever length it's got to be? It should be in whatever form it is. And, you know, what's been cool about 30 for 30 is not only do we do the features, and I think this is a good thing because lots of people are fans of 30 for 30s, but we've done like 50 or 60 short films.
Right, right.
Some of those are amazing and definitely like under the radar and people haven't seen them. And then very recently we've moved into podcasts, you know, and have done some like amazing podcast stuff in that way. So now, like, when we get a story, we're looking at a story, we're like, all right, like, what's the best way to tell this story? You know, is there archival? Is there great speakers? Is there, you know, and then we think, okay, now it should be a podcast. Now it should be a short. Now it should be a film.
Okay, so you're first going to research it and then figure out what it should be.
At least when we're coming up with the ideas. A lot of times stuff comes in from directors, but that's how we think about it. And that story should just be able to go in whatever direction possible.
Now, did the OJ 8-parter give birth to all these other long versions of it and all that?
I think so. I mean, on our side, we've definitely looked at doing longer pieces. You know, we have, you know, the Vic one was, you know, over 4 hours. You know,
we have
another big Lance Armstrong film coming out this year, which is another long one.
Oh, that's going to be a good one.
That's going to be
I always say Lance Armstrong is the Christopher Columbus of, you know, Christopher Columbus is the Lance Armstrong of explorers, because they all lied and cheap, but people still go like this. Hey,
that's right. And that was, you know, part of that, you know, thinking about why we decided to do that one. Everyone's like, oh, we're sick of him. We've heard from him. But, you know, it's been a long time since there's a full piece. So there's been a little bit more time. And then for us, it was about the director. And for that, because he's so, you know, such a captivating personality, you needed someone who wasn't going to get stars in their eyes.
Right.
Some director who was going to be able to go toe-to-toe with him. And we found that when a director named Marina Zenovich, who's done Fantastic Lies, which is a 30 for 30 about the Duke lacrosse scandal.
I got to check that one out. I didn't check that one out. Yeah.
She also did the Robin Williams doc on HBO. So again, like, she dealt with kind of complicated subjects. She did a Roman Polanski film for HBO. So again,
what's so complicated about Roman Polanski? He liked what he liked. R. Kelly before R. Kelly. Got it. But yeah, so she's going to direct this one.
That's right. She's directed that one. It premiered at Sundance this year. And so that one's going to come out later this year.
She sat there with Lance and they went through stuff?
Yeah, you know, it's like one
is
of those
willing,
things.
Like, the willing to talk about this stuff?
Yeah, I mean, listen, all the time, you know, people come in and pitch an idea. And for us, it's like, well, is that person willing to talk? Are they willing to say something interesting? Or are they willing to go there, you know?
Right.
And so, you know, a lot of times a project's just not ready if someone's not willing to go there yet. And, you know, just to make a doc for the sake of making one, luckily, like, ESPN doesn't have to worry about that. Like, we have mostly live sports, usually.
Yeah.
that covers everything. So for us, it's not like we have to fill up 100 hours on Thursday nights. You know, we don't have to do that. For us, we want to treat each of our films like its own little event.
Right.
You know, everyone's like, that's a great film. We really give it the time and the energy to do it.
How hard is that research? Like even like with the Lance Armstrong thing that's coming up, like who, like, did you talk to his family? Did, like, who's involved? And did his people come to you guys and say, hey, we want to do this?
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, his people reached out, but again, like, for us, like, it's never that the subject of the film is the producer on the film. You know, they have to be willing to, like, nobody gets final cut, you know, we get final cut, the director gets final cut, right. You know? So it's always that kind of dance. Like, you almost, you know, when it comes to a doc, like, you can't tell your own story.
Right.
Like, if you do, it's a different thing. It's from your perspective, and there's value in that, too. But, like, you need an objective eye. You need someone to kind of make peace with that, and you need to have the relationship between a subject and a director to say, like, all right, I trust you're going to be fair, you know?
Okay. So some of them just want to get their story out. I think I would think, like, with a Lance Armstrong situation, he wants to show that maybe he did wrong, but the whole structure of the shit was wrong, so he wanted to show that he's a peg in it. I'm just trying to understand.
You are right. You are going to enjoy this film very much. It explores all that type of stuff, and that's the thing. Like, we're always looking for, again, like, it's not just, have you thought about doing a Tiger Woods document? You know, it's like people do these broad things, but it's really like, what's the angle? What's the take on the story?
Right.
You know, we did a 30 for 30 last year that we're incredibly proud of because it was a little bit different. About Kobayashi and Joey Chestnut.
Oh, yes, the eating competition.
Called The Good, the Bad, the Hungry.
Now, how hard was it to shoot in Coney Island with all those, with all my people?
Well, again, you know, it's all historical. So it's all grabbing that great archival, yes. You know, and pulling it together. But that's the thing. Like, you think, oh, it's going to be this funny whatever. But actually, multiple people cry in the film.
Yeah.
It's incredibly, like, sensitive. It's about nationalist, you know, mentality.
Yes.
It's all things, but, you know, to me, it's like a great left turn for 30 for 30, where it's like, oh yeah, well, that's a competition and people treat it like a sport. Why shouldn't there just be a great story within that?
Yes, yes. I think Joey Chestnut gave birth to Trump. He made it all nationalistic, all patriotic. Everybody was booing that poor Japanese kid. He just trying to eat hot dogs.
That's right. That's right.
So I also love, I can't remember all the ones that I've seen, but I've seen a bunch. But and I did see the Bird and Magic one. Because first of all, it's hard to believe that even the NBA, like the NBA games back in the early 80s weren't televised live. It's like people, when you tell people that, they can't believe it.
Yeah.
I was like, how did that, and then these two players just made it possible for, I mean, that documentary really just, it had so much backstory and so much like old footage. I just loved it.
So right, that's the thing, like, it's like, oh, Bird Magic. Everybody knows everything about that.
And no. Yet,
like, exactly. And so we're always looking for those things. And it's like, you know, if I get a pitch from somebody, I always tell people, like, if it takes me 30 minutes after your pitch to go on Google and, like, get everything in your pitch, that's not good enough. You know, right. You got to tell us something different. You got to bring that perspective that's new, something fresh.
Did y'all do an episode on the one and dones?
Yeah, well, you know, again, we looked at it from a particular angle. Like, we tend to not do a thematic look of all one and done, but instead, we did one on Calipari.
Right. Yeah.
Calipari has, like, turned the system onto its head, you know? Yeah. And so now you get the one and done story, but you get it through a personal story. You get it with this other direction on it.
Right. They try to give him all the blame for it, but other coaches were doing the same thing.
Just playing the system that was out there. You blame the player, blame the game, you know?
The best footage I always see of Calipari is when, what was Temple's coach trying to go at him? Like, I'll kill you.
Chaney.
Oh, that was so good. I think that gave birth to Jerry Springer. the Temple best. Well, now what about, did y'all do a John Thompson type of situation?
I think I saw. We haven't yet. That's certainly on the list of something I would love to do. You know, I think, again, that's just about who can tell that story, you know?
Yeah.
Baltimore in that era, about DC in that era.
DC in that era, yeah.
A lot of that's about filmmaker.
how off campus and on campus was so different. How the basketball team was the only black kids in the school.
That's right. And how John Thompson wasn't scared of shit, you know?
Wasn't scared of shit. John Thompson was the Dr. Huxtable we really needed. That's what Bill Cosby was trying to be, but he fell very short.
That's right.
Now, what about, like, the bias, Lynn Bias thing? Because I know Lynn Bias was a big, big story when that first happened. Now, this was 80s or early 90s?
Yeah,
80s. 80s. Damn, that's a long time.
I know. Wow. Well, that's the other thing. Like, we're only looking at stories, you know, every time something happens, like the Astros cheating scandal, or, you know, anytime somebody wins, we immediately get all these emails being like, you should do a 30 for 30 on this. And again, we say, like, in due time. Let's see what the impact of that event is. Let's give the audience a little time away from that story. And then when we actually look at it 10 or 15 years later, look at it with fresh eyes and learn new things. Maybe the main people will say something different, you know, all that stuff. So, yeah, Len Bias, I mean, that's now, that's 30 plus years ago. Yeah,
30 plus years ago. And that would have been, because I think they touched on that in the Lakers-Celtics rivalry, because he was coming to help the Celtics in the end of the 80s to, you know, maintain. And that's why the Celtics went to that little dip, because Bias, that Bias incident.
So, you know, what's interesting now is because we've done 100 features and 50, 60 shorts and, you know, what's now happening is stories are creating constellations.
Yeah.
And some stories bleed into the other one.
Yes, yes.
So, like, we have coming up is this Michael Jordan Last Dance documentary that everyone's very excited about.
Okay, this is about his final year in the NBA?
It's about the 97-98 year, so the last year of the second three-peat. Okay. And, of course, you have part of Dennis Rodman's story in there. We did a feature on Dennis, you know.
Right.
There's a story in there about how Dennis took a week off in the middle of the season because he needed to clear his head.
Yes.
That's an animated short film about what happened that week as a separate project that was done a couple of years ago. So what you see is, like, all these stories are now complementing each other in a variety of ways. And now, again, you brought it up in the very beginning, like OJ. Like, if you're in the future – and you're like, I want to learn about this OJ thing. You'll be able to watch 6 or 7 different projects.
Right.
Speak from a different perspective. And maybe that's how we learn history now. As opposed to, like, here's a textbook that tells you that, you know, the Pilgrims and the Indians were friends. It's like, you know.
Yeah, no. You need more sources. More sources, right. Just like in school.
And so you're getting that with documentaries now, because you're getting so much stuff being made that now you can get at it from a variety of angles.
I wish we had access to this kind of stuff when we were younger. Because it's the easier way to learn. It's the better way to learn. It's more thorough. It's like you're really involved and locked into it, right?
Are you kidding me? I'd have a thought, and then I'd be like, I don't know where to look that up, and I'd just move on. So, you know, I mean,
you're right.
Young generations are way smarter than we are, no doubt.
What's access? They got the access to this information that somebody already compiled and gave it to you.
That's right.
But it's like it's an ongoing thing because things happen every day. So somebody's always got to compile these things and put them in some type of. Now, where did you grow up? You grew up in where?
I actually grew up in Connecticut.
Oh, I'm up here in Connecticut right now. I'm a Branch Davidian. I'm hiding in my Branch Davidian. I'm David Koresh out here, baby.
Very good. It's like, what is it, Tyson or 50 Cent's home had that big
that's right.
Spot in Connecticut?
That might be where I'm at. I can't confirm, but it might be.
So it's big for me to be at ESPN. It's like the place, you know, growing up, you know. I mean, yeah. I applied for an internship back when I was 18 and got denied. So it was a good full circle to get the job, you know.
Yeah, so I bought in Bristol?
Yeah, I'm from Northern Connecticut, right outside Hartford. But, you know, for me, like, my South Windsor. And
South Windsor, yeah, I'm up near there. I'm up in Winstead right now.
There you go, right there.
Oh, I'm a regular raggy. I'm a raggy.
And for me, my ultimate sports team was always growing up was the UConn Huskies.
I was about to ask you that because if you can't grow up here and not be a Huskies fan, right?
It's impossible. Not only that, but not only the men's team, but I'm like a diehard women's basketball fan.
Oh,
like,
I was referring to the women's team. The men's team come after the women.
That's right. That's right. You know, and it's interesting because it's not, you know, and this is why when they have the conversation about women's sports and following the sports, you know, I've always just been attracted to excellence.
Yes.
And so, you know, for me, like, I don't even say, like, oh, they can't jump as high as the men. Like, it never even entered my thought. Just the way that they played, the way that they, the players they used, the coaching, you know, I've watched, and I was a season ticket holder as a family for many years. So, like, my friends all make fun of me. Like, I know more about UConn women's basketball history than almost any other sport that I follow.
Now, who's the favorite player? I know you love Lobo.
I mean, Lobo was, you know, Lobo and Rosati, that was like, those are the teams that took it to that next level.
Then they went four?
They did not win four. They won the first one.
Oh, that's all they won, the first one?
Yeah, they won the
Who was my girl who was the point guard?
Brianna Stewart won four. She's the only one to win four. Diana Taurasi won three.
What, Taurasi lost for senior year?
No, she lost freshman year. Freshman year. See, look how many things I know about this. It's crazy.
It's awesome. Both my sisters played college ball, too.
It's, you know, and what's interesting about the women's game is that the men's game, if you took a player from 1986, you took Len Bias, and you put him in the NBA today, pretty comparable. Like, the athleticism is pretty much the same. In the women's game,
different.
The strides have gone because of training, people getting into the sport earlier, all those things. So the game has gotten so much better. Not to say that in 20 years they're not going to be above the rim, but, you know, you're seeing now the 6'5", you know, instead of what was a center now playing on the perimeter, just like in the NBA.
You know what changed that game? Money. Once money got into it, it's like we can practice all year like the men. We don't got to be a nurse during the fucking, you know what I'm saying? They have to do other jobs before.
They still do. And I mean, they're fighting for everything they can. But if they had even a little bit more money, I mean, most of these players have to go abroad to make their real money. Because what happens is, like, in basically Russia, China, and Turkey, and a couple other places, these oligarchs basically, as a side hustle, like, fund these teams, and they'll pay $1 million for somebody to come over and play just a couple of months. So what happens, though, the women end up playing year-round, and that's hard. That's impossible for anybody.
And if they come over, they come back home, and they whip us, just like the women of Troy. I saw that one, too, the women of Troy. What was her name who went over to Europe, the point guard, that she came back and was MVP for 5 years in a row in the WNBA?
Yes, that is right. First, I will say that's an HBO film.
Oh, that's it. My bad.
Let me just say,
fight.
30 for 30s are kind of like Kleenex now. Like, everyone calls the best ones, you know, 30 for 30. So we're good with that.
That is hilarious. It's like Q-tips.
That's right.
And it's really a cotton swallow, but everybody's just going to say that it's, everybody gives y'all credit for all the good ones because I think y'all really gave birth to them anyway. So I'm sure it's a compliment when people confuse their stuff with your stuff, right?
It's a huge compliment. And really, like, we're just trying to raise the bar. You know, like, I think now what's interesting about 30 for 30 is, you know, we're doing less, but we're trying to make all of them very impactful. You know, so we're really trying to dig deep on stories because now a lot of the big stories have been picked over.
Right. But a lot of things still. A lot of things fall through the cracks. Now, do you ever see other people's productions and go, we could have did it better?
Yes.
No. Yeah, beef.
Listen, it's, you know, everyone's looking, you know how it is when there's somebody in the creative community pitching a project. Sometimes they want more money. Sometimes they want more creative freedom. Sometimes, you know, it really depends on what that storyteller is looking for. Right. So sometimes, like, you know, just interests don't align. That's all it is.
Now, did you watch, like, The Woman of Troy and go like this? They missed that part right there. That's a hole.
Well, you know, obviously that pitch came to us first. So, you know, we had a look at it. And we think, again, there's a lot of stories where, like, that obviously should have been made into a doc. And I like that doc. It's really good.
Yeah.
We just felt like, was it enough to kind of, like, get everyone crazy excited? Maybe not, you know? And maybe that's the reason we, you know, decided not to push forward on that. But they did a great job with that.
I thought it was pretty solid.
Need more, again, like, I'm not trying to beat the drum for female sports, but we need more documentaries. You
Eyes
know,
on, yep.
About, that's how it happens, you know?
Now, how come we never see things about, like, the European Women's League? Like, I see footage of the Men's League all the time. But I never, ever, ever see anywhere, not even on ESPN, like, highlights, anything. I never see women European basketball. Is that because the WNBA trying to keep all eyes on them? Or is it just because they don't cover the shit?
Yeah, I think part of it is they don't cover it, you know?
It's sad, though.
Yeah, but again, like, how many sports are out there these days?
They can put spelling bees on ESPN, but you can't put a fucking basketball game.
I'll tell you, I'm always astounded, and it's always great to remember the behemoth that is ESPN. You know, they have, you know, not only the five channels on cable, but we also have ESPN Plus now, which is on our own streaming service. And that, you know, assuming the world goes back, I mean, has like 1,500 live events a month. Yeah. So like they're just covering
so
everything.
Much.
And that's really like, that's the bread and butter of ESPN.
You know? Is it time for all women sports channel, ESPN Women?
We have ESPNW, which is like a female focus, like part of it. But, you know, again, I think there's
I didn't even know that. I had no idea. I thought that was West Coast.
Yeah. I mean, listen, I think the U.S. women's soccer team are leading the way, right? It's in the end, it's like, show me the numbers. And the women on the soccer team, they have the numbers. They outdraw the men, you know, when the Women's World Cup is going around. And so that's the best way to make the argument, which is just to point to the numbers and be like, yeah, we need to get paid in conjunction to what the numbers are.
I think women's basketball been holding it down longer than women's soccer.
It's true.
I think it's a lot longer because I remember even like with the women of Troy, it's like it was no soccer talk back then. There was no Olympic anything. It was just Cheryl Miller.
Yeah.
And she was women's sports.
I think thing about soccer is people love like an every 4 year thing as well. So I think that helps. You know, get people excited about it. Cause the key is, you know, there's gotta be support for, they've tried to start plenty of, and there is the NWSL now for women's soccer, but like, you gotta draw, you know, bigger numbers. You gotta, it's a kind of combination of coverage and drawing people kind of year round. Like, you know, basketball player, they've been doing it for a long time now and still they have to fight, you know, to get that type of thing. But I think it always comes down to like storylines, you know?
Right.
Like, if there's a player who comes into the play basketball who's the LeBron James of women's hoops, who's so captivating and so much better than everyone else, I guarantee you ratings will go up. And we're a star culture. When people talk about, oh, when is soccer going to be big in the States? You know, it's like, it's always been like, it's coming, and it's growing. But I always answer, it's like, when we have a striker who's like Kobe and LeBron. Forward who scores 50 goals in a season, the best forward, I guarantee you will see a massive spike, because that's what we love. We love a phenom in America.
It's not going to be the number one sport in America until the number one player in that sport is American.
I mean my favorite game though is like, if you were to take athletes in other sports, you know, and put them in soccer at an early age, think about all of our running backs, safeties, point guards,
cornerbacks,
guards, you know.
These guys would be beasts on that field.
Beasts.
They can run all day.
Soccer player? Come on.
Can you imagine prime time as a soccer player?
Exactly.
He would score every money. He would be running around people.
But there you go. You said it earlier. Like, when will that happen? When some kid somewhere says, you know what? This is how I can make the most money. I know I can make $100 million by being the best soccer player in the world.
Yeah, we definitely need the number one player in that league to be. But now, what do you think about all these like European players coming over here and just dominating like an NBA?
For soccer?
Or for basketball?
For basketball. Listen, I think it's great. Listen, you want the best players in the world, you know? And I think, you know, we've barely – I mean, I think what has not been talked about, which I think was going to be the biggest thing to happen to basketball, I think this is the most genius thing the NBA is doing. You know, they're launching NBA Africa.
Oh, really?
They're launching a full league on the continent.
Oh, I didn't know that. Oh, and that's unbelievable. You got to go straight to the factory from where the best players come from. Straight to the factory.
If you put resources and training and infrastructure and like, there's no way that's not going to be the most important thing to happen in the NBA ever. You know, the amount of talent that's come out of that continent is some of the greatest of all time, including Embiid of the new wave.
Olajuwon.
But, like, we're barely scratching the surface, you know? Right. It's like
– even in the last 30 years, basketball has grown, you know, exponentially on the continent. So, like, where do you think people are going to be going to get them? Like, South Africa? It's going to be Nigeria? I think Nigeria is going to have
They got teams in, like, 13 countries. I mean, again, it's a lot of it's just about, like, the infrastructure of it. You know, it used to be, like, if you wanted to leave, you had to go to college and be, like, non-paid and go to college. And then, you know, it's just all this stuff that, you know, I mean, listen, you want to get into a real thing. Like, the NCAA really needs to be, you know, needs a reawakening in terms of how it helps athletes and how we prepare athletes for the next level. Because
now, what do you see? Wait. Now, do you see players that maybe in a league here going over to Africa to play? That has to happen.
Not yet. I mean, again, it's all about cash, right? So as long as you have the most you know, cash, you're always going to come. But what's really, there's a story that came out a couple weeks ago. So LaMelo Ball, who's the youngest of the Ball family.
Right.
He's going to be, you know, a top five pick in the draft this year. And so instead of going to college, he went to Australia to play in the Australian League.
Oh.
And so a lot of players are starting to do that. But even more importantly, so he played his year. He did pretty well. I mean, he's 18 years old. It's a good league for Americans because you can speak English. The weather's nice.
And you make money.
And you make money, right? Instead of like working for college and having to go to class and whatever it is. But what he did is he ended up buying the team that he played for.
He bought the team after he went to the league?
After his season was over, he's now purchased the team. And what you're seeing is a lot of players are now interested in becoming owners.
Owners overseas. So
in Australia, you can buy a team because you can't buy one in the U.S. anymore. It's like it costs too much money, you know?
Right.
Ron will be able to, but that's it. So now you have guys buying teams and getting ownership, and this is fascinating, you know. Finally, I feel like players are getting their due, are getting to use their expertise, and who knows what that'll mean if you have players around the globe owning teams as opposed to maybe like sponsoring AAU teams, you know, which is that slippery slope of eligibility and, you know, whatever, just like own the teams.
That is unbelievable. I had no idea. So this 18-year-old kid bought the team?
You know, listen, the Ball family has made a good amount of money marketing and, you know, whatever it is. So I don't know, you know, how he did it. But, yeah, he bought the team, which I think is really cool.
That's unbelievable. And the thing is, there's a lot of talent over in Australia. You see a lot of players coming from over there, too.
Oh, my God, a ton of talent. Patty Mills, you know, Longley from back in the day. You know, Australia's always been Ben Simmons. I mean, there you go.
Ben Simmons, yeah. So you think so this can really spark, you think more players will leave college and say, fuck college, I'm going to go over here, get paid from 18. And because I think you play against better competition in these foreign professional leagues.
So that's the thing. So one, like if you're playing up in age against grown men, that's going to make you stronger.
Right.
And it's going to really test your game. Two, okay, I'm going to say you could either go to school and not get paid and barely have enough money to get whatever you want. Or I'm going to give you a paid internship, you know, in a place in your sport, and then you don't have to go to classes you don't want to. I mean, you know, this is America. Like, you should be able to do that. So, I think more and more people are going to do that.
So what if, like, let's say you're a basketball player, and you're like, I'm going to play, instead of going to a junior college, I'll go overseas and play. Then you still have your eligibility when you come back?
Yeah, you don't need eligibility to play in the league. You know what I mean?
I'm saying, what if you want to come back to college?
Oh, I know. I think once you get paid.
Once you get paid anywhere.
Yeah, you're done. And by the way, I mean, it's just strange because, you know, the reason to go to college, right, is to study under a great professor.
Yeah.
So, like, if you are a player and you want to get a professor, Coach K, I get that. Like, right. You get a master's class, you know, under that. And, like, that should be your education in doing that. But if you're just going, a lot of people just go because it's the place to get the most exposure for the next stage of their career. And I think that's the thing that's starting to shift. And also the NBA is doing the same thing. They're trying to up the salaries of the G Leagues, you know, trying to like make it like, you know, maybe it's an entry level job, you know.
Right.
And as long as you provide other resources, because, you know, if you're 18, you still want to learn, you know, other things. But maybe it's stuff more about finance and personal wealth management, you know,
like, and not get graded on it. If you failed the class, you can't play. They don't want that to be in that situation.
You know, this idea that, you know, if you're a college Division I football player, that you're, you know, taking intro to philosophy and becoming a well-rounded, you know, these are like full-time jobs. These are full-time jobs, and so it's just a little hypocritical. You know, I once read a thing that at some Big 12 school, like the strength and conditioning coach was making like $2 million a year. Like, not the head coach, not the offensive coordinator, not the defensive coordinator, like the strength and conditioning coach. And so it's like, come on, you got to put that money in families, in athletes, you know, like it's a joke to me. That's
absolutely gross.
Yeah.
That is gross.
But it's a system, man. And you know how hard, I mean, listen, how hard is it to break a system? It's very hard, you know?
Yeah, definitely when they've been around this long. Now, do you think the players will ever get some type of compensation for this playing in college?
I do.
Yeah, and so what do you think about the law they've just passed in California that they can make money off their likeness?
The first step, you know, and I also think as more and more of, you know, athletes gain a stronger sense of social change and awareness and use their power, mm-hmm. you know, and come together. That's what's going to drive it. I mean, I think what LeBron has done, you know, and building up these empires and doing like, you know, all these, you know, people are, they're working together. This is not when one person gets it, the other person doesn't get it. That's not right. How it is. They're growing the pie, you know? So I think now when you have more people who can offer that type of, advice, that makes a huge difference.
Now, when it came to sports, did you play any sports growing up?
Yeah, I played every sport. You know, I played soccer, basketball, and tennis, baseball. You know, I kind of played a little bit of everything.
And you were around when the Big East was the Big East now, right?
I was. You know, I mean, listen, I know you're a UNC fan. You know,
that's
and
right.
UNC took down Connecticut in 1998 when they were the one seed. That was like those Vince Carter, Jameson squads. But right. That was a good loss for us because the team came back the next year
and won it all.
Won it all.
Yeah. Like, and it was 99.
You know, UConn fans have nothing against UNC. It's Duke we really hate.
Right.
But, you know, UNC, like, that was a pivotal moment for the program, you know?
Y'all had a crew, too. Who was on that team, that 98
team? That was Richard Hamilton.
Yes.
Khalid El-Amin, who's, like, one of the all-time great college players.
Yes. You know? He was a shooting son of a bitch.
That's right, you know, and I like that team was one of those teams where it's like everyone knew their role and they were greater as a whole, and I like squads like that.
Who was the coach that was
Calhoun, man. Calhoun, you know.
When he left, do you think that just
– Well, listen, he left. Ollie came in, Kevin Ollie.
Right.
And he did win a championship.
That's
so
true.
Like, people are, you know, so quick. The last
they
couple
forget
of years,
that. Huh?
But he did win a championship. Shabazz Napier, that was a – amazing team.
Yes! Y'all had some crew. Yo, players come to Connecticut, man.
That's right. And now we got a killer head coach. I mean, yeah. Dan Hurley.
Oh,
Dan
Hurley
comes from, you know, his dad, Bob Hurley, is a legendary Hall of Fame high school coach.
Yes.
You know, brother Bobby Hurley. But Dan Hurley is a son of a gun, man. And he's like, he's already turned the program around. And, like, I would say in the next couple of years, UConn's going to be back in that top five.
What do you like about his coaching style?
He practices what he preaches. Like, he's a hard-nosed, you know, mofo. But he's
a Buffalo boy, right? They grew up in Buffalo?
No, he grew up in he coached in Buffalo. He grew up in New Jersey.
Okay, coached in Buffalo. He had a good run over there, didn't he?
Turned those teams around, you know, too. So, like, you know, the thing about
Wasn't Christian Laettner coming up to see some of his games and all that? Did I see that on? Was that on 30 for 30?
Well, I Hate Christian Laettner is a great 30 for 30.
That's what it is. Yes.
What's great about that is the angle, right? Like, when you kind of like go at it, you know, it wasn't like, let's just tell the Duke story of these teams. It was like looking at this player in a kind of other angle. And you start to understand what that must have been like for him, you know, along that process. So it humanizes him, but also gives you that kind of, oh, I remember that. And I hated that guy. And I'm a UConn fan. I mean, he broke our heart in 1989, you know, by hitting us a game winner over us. So, you know, I'm all a part of that.
That was a classic game. I mean, I really hated Christian Laettner when I watched him play because I'm such a big Tar Heel fan. But when I watched that documentary, I was like, I understand this dude more now. And I was sad that it took that many years for me to see that side of it because I really owe him an apology.
I mean, that, you know, listen, in America, we are sports crazed, you know, and people, you know, I mean, this, you know, people take it a little too far. You know, I think you got to just understand, especially when you have people about, you know, these are kids 18 to 22.
Yeah.
You know, so
when they put him on the dream team, I'm telling you, a white person couldn't come nowhere near a fucking black barbershop because you would have got beat up. The neighborhood, everybody was angry that he made it on the dream team.
That's right.
And then Isaiah Thomas didn't.
Yeah, that was not a good look for hoops. I understand what they were trying to do, but it wasn't like you had Patrick Ewing, you know, or somebody like that, you know.
Was that a 30 for 30, that dream team?
No, that was not.
That might be a good one to look into, how everybody hated on Isaiah Thomas. Because him and Jordan, remember him and Jordan, they had those Detroit Pistons?
Just wait for the Jordan doc. You're going to
get
good stuff, you know.
So when is that? When is that plan to come?
I don't know when this is coming out, but April 19th is the beginning of the run. It's a 5-week run, 2 hours each Sunday night.
On Jordan.
It's on the 97-98 Bulls.
Oh.
With kind of a Jordan perspective on it all. And it's excellent, I got to say. People are going to freak out. They're going to really – it's coming at the exact moment of nostalgia and, you know, desire for stuff in that era. It's just – it's special film. Special
and
film.
And it's coming out when?
April 19th.
Okay, so that's soon. And it's like how many parts? Four part?
Five part. Well, it's 10 hours.
10 hours of watching. That's going to be good as shit. Now, how much footage did y'all get, like, off the court and behind the scenes? And because you had so much great Rodman stuff.
Yeah.
I'm like, where do you even find this?
That's one of the things that I think really distinguishes a 30 for 30 from other projects is, you know, we're really looking for archival. When someone calls me up and says, hey, I found this box of tapes in the basement, like, that's my, like, dream scenario. I'm like, hey, we have this stuff that nobody's seen. Would you guys be? Yep. Yes, I mean, I'm interested. Yes. So, you know, the interesting thing, the backstory on this Jordan project is, you know, the NBA Entertainment, back when Adam Silver was in charge of that department, basically followed that team, that 97-98 team, all year long.
With camera crew.
A camera crew, all year. So they had something like 300, 500 hours of footage that had never seen the light of day.
Wow.
Film. And so we're always looking for that. And that's, you know, if you're a filmmaker as well, you're trying to tell us stories, like, you know, we always tell people, like, go do your homework, like, go find what exists, you know, because it's not about the game footage. Great. Well, that'll be there. You know, the leagues will have that. You'll license that. But it's about what else can you find that's special?
It's like treasure hunting.
Yeah, and by the way, sometimes it comes in audio form, and that's why we've been doing podcasts.
Oh, yeah, yeah.
So for us, it's like whatever it is, but archival is, if you have great archival, what a great place to start building a story from.
Oh, I mean, it must be great if you see some old footage that nobody's seen or ain't seen in 50 years. I'm sure it's going to be, so since they had all these hours on the Bulls team, is most of this stuff y'all showing is stuff never seen before?
Yeah, I mean, a lot of it has never been seen widely at all. So
now, what did you see?
Incredible. You also got to remember, like, 97, 98, just kind of like pre-reality show.
Yeah, yeah.
So now, when you have people who are filming, you know, basketball players, whatever, like, they're so attuned to the archetypes of reality TV that they become a character on it. This is kind of a different scenario. You know, you had big-ass cameras, you know, and you know, you catch moments that you would not catch nowadays.
Now, what did you see that made you go, oh, shit, wait till this gets out?
Well, listen, we're too close for me to offer any spoilers. This is about the biggest ESPN project in the history of
ESPN.
Give
me a little teasy tease.
And additionally, you know, as a development guy, like, when a project like this comes along, like, there's not really any development to do. This is a yes. This is like a go, you know? So there's a lot of partners on this project. You know, there's a lot of people. My contributions are minimal to none on this. It's really like the NBA team, the Jordan team, you know, the ESPN Films producers, you know, really working with the filmmaker as well. So it's a very much a collaborative effort. You know, I'm like everyone else where I was like, yeah, that's a good idea. A Jordan 30 for 30. Yeah, good idea.
Then they get some good footage of Jordan by himself, just so you know, talking and speaking his mind.
Yeah, the interviews with Jordan are incredible. So that's the stuff. You get stuff from Jordan you've never seen. You get stuff from Jordan you've never heard, and you get it straight from the source. So it's going to be the definitive thing. It's going to be, I think, one of the, you know, I think it's going to rival Tiger King for the, you know, the most important piece of content of the year. You know, it's that good. It's that comprehensive. So.
Oh, I cannot wait. Now, do you think Jordan was freer in this because he knew it was his last year and not his last, but last year with the Bulls, right?
No, I don't, you know, in that year, I don't know. I mean, it's a good question. You know, I think what you get is a portrait of somebody so dedicated to winning.
Yeah.
You're able to kind of see that play out. You hear that all the time.
Oh, right.
Was, you know, blah, blah, blah. But now you see it and you get the perspective on it, you know, and that's where you kind of, you know, can take something that's, again, we talk like written in a book or that you read somewhere, but now attach images to it. It becomes a three-dimensional thought.
Right, because we all heard about how much he wanted to win, how competitive Jordan's been, even on and off the court, on a golf court, on a poker table. We all hear these stories.
Anything, you know?
anything. I heard they bet on just throwing paper in the trash in the locker room.
That's right.
And it got competitive. Now, did you see the relationship, like personal relationship that he had with some of his teammates? Like, I don't know, fucking, what do you call it, a Pippen or?
Yeah, man, listen, it's everything. I mean, because it's 10 hours.
Jordan's kind of funny. Jordan seems like he can be nice, but he's also an asshole. That's why I like him. Like, he's also an asshole to the people who he like. And is some of that in this?
Again, he's the ultimate competitor. So I think you could take that any way you want, you know. Right. But that's what you get, and you get that perspective. And you know, again, you know, to be that good at something, you have to be at that level.
Yeah, the only time I saw him lose was to Juanita, his ex-wife. She put up 30 on him.
He still did all right.
He's doing all right. He got new twins, a new wife, but she put up 30 on him that night. Now, what high school did you go to in Connecticut over there?
Yeah, I went to prep school. So
I'm Catholic.
I went to Loomis Chaffee.
Okay, I went to Bishop Lachlan in Brooklyn.
Okay,
sure. You had sports teams, right?
Oh yeah.
I know y'all had. If y'all had a prep school, y'all had some good teams, which I had equipment and stuff.
You know, I was never like, you know, I went to prep school, but I wasn't like a lacrosse guy. Like, you know, I just played kind of, I would say, you know, traditional, you know, soccer, basketball. You know,
how good were your sports teams? Really good, like the basketball team. Good.
You know what's funny is now they're really good.
That's everybody's school. Every time we leave the school, that's when everything starts coming up. They got a new library. They got new jerseys, and the team can play.
I mean, I was, like, reading some UConn Huskies recruiting news, and they were, like, recruiting some guy from my high school. And I was like, this is a little bit different than back in my day, you know?
Oh, really? Nobody from your school, like, sports people ever went to UConn to play?
Not for hoops. No, yeah. Definitely not for hoops. But, you know, listen, I think – you know, all those prep schools are factories too, you know, for hockey, for, you know, lacrosse. You see a lot of great athletes come in those places. You also see a lot of people, I don't know if you had it at Bishop, but, you know, like PGs, you know, and they come do an extra year, a post-grad year to help improve their recruiting.
Oh, I never saw that. But yeah, they let them stay an extra high school year.
Yeah. So a lot of that's a thing that happens quite a bit, you know.
Really?
Yep. Yep.
And they can play the next year.
You know, you can get like an extra year to help, you know, which I always thought was crazy because you have like a 19-year-old kid, like, you know, out there dominating, you know.
Yeah. Oh, I did not know that. Yeah. Wait, that's bananas. So you can get to stay an extra year. I thought you can do that in college. I never heard that in high school.
Yeah. But, you know, for me, like, you know, the teams were great and I had a great time playing. But I just remember, like, my buddies and I, what we would do is, like, you know, we weren't cool enough to go to parties or get, you know, whatever. We'd be like, bring the boom box, like set up in the gym and play like 3-on-3 and talk shit to each other all night. You know,
yeah.
Like, some of nice. That, like my favorite sports memories, you know, of all time. You know,
are you a Patriots fan?
I'm a New York Giants fan. My mom is from Brooklyn.
Yeah. Okay.
She went to Coney Island. She went to Lincoln.
I went to Lafayette for a year. That's right up the block from Lincoln.
There you go. So my mom was there. My dad immigrated to New York City. So, like, in a lot of ways, like, New York City's, you know, my blood, you know, and I grew up in Connecticut.
Lincoln, for a long time, was the heartbeat of basketball in Brooklyn.
No doubt. Telfair, you know, Marbury.
All the Marburys. All 14 of them. Right. Now, what do you think about Chinese, speaking of Marbury, what do you think about the Chinese league? Because they also got ballers over there, too, and they got more than enough money because they got more viewers than even the NBA.
Yeah, I mean, listen, the NBA made a huge push, and it started with Yao and then moved from there, you know, and it created, and this is why earlier this year with the Daryl Morey tweet.
Yeah, Houston, I'm at GM.
Deal because that's probably the second biggest market for consumption of NBA.
Right.
But we haven't seen a lot of talent come out of China necessarily.
Not yet. But I think the more players go over there, the more they get the hang of it. I mean, it's a lot of people not to have ballers in that.
All right. If we were doing a draft, you take China, I'll take Africa. We'll see who gets more players.
Well, there's a lot of Chinese people in Africa right now opening businesses.
That's true.
And it's not the other way around, though. You don't see a lot of Africans in China with their businesses.
Although that is also where a lot of the top women's players, that they can get paid the most by going to China.
Oh, that's where the basketball women get paid?
Yeah, so like Maya Moore, you know, and Brianna Stewart, like they went, you know, they can make, you know, like 7 figures playing on a Chinese team.
What?
For a couple months, yeah.
For a couple months?
Yeah.
Now, is it because it's so far away, or because a lot of players don't want to go there, or is it just because how many people they got watching their games? They got the kind of money.
I don't know. I have a feeling it's similar to Russia, where a lot of rich people just prop up these leagues, and there's no, you know, rules necessarily about how much they have to pay people. So they just, you know, they want the best of the best. Right. I know in a lot of the foreign leagues for the women, you can only have like two Americans on the team.
Right.
Players. So they have like a cap that way.
Right.
But they get paid that way. But yeah, listen, I mean, China, I mean, how many people in China, right? I mean, that's, you know, basketball is easier to follow because it's five guys with no masks on, you know, easier to connect to players.
And as in Asia, people sleep on this, but Asia is a huge market for basketball.
Philippines are crazy for hoops. That's always been
crazy.
A place. And who knows? Japan's even, always had a league, you know.
Koreans, look at North Korea brought Rodman over there.
Yeah, that's right.
Because he was a big fan of the Bulls.
That's
Kim Jong.
Yeah.
So do you see a possibility that a league, like China might be a pause? Because it's so far away, though. Do you see a team popping up in Asia anytime soon for the NBA?
It's just you got to figure out the planes, right? You got to get a supersonic jet because otherwise it's just too much of a competitive disadvantage.
And do you think that Corona right now, this situation might slow down all those dreams of that?
Yes. Everything's been paused and everything's – yeah, I think, you know, we're about to enter a recession. So I think, you know, we're a little far off. But I know the NFL and the NBA have been looking at Mexico City, you know, for a long time. Like, that seems to make sense. Listen, like, look at what a success story Toronto is.
Yeah.
You know? I mean, like, what a great place for an NBA team. Like, a cosmopolitan city like that. You know, I think they gave up on Vancouver a little too quickly. You know, I could see that happening. But until the flights, you know, and the NFL has been flirting with London forever. You know, I mean, they host a couple every year, you know, of having to do that. But until you can make it over in 3 hours as opposed to six, you know, I think it's just hard.
Do you think the long-term effects of this coronavirus might slow down all those dreams of starting a London team for the NFL and all that?
I think it slows everything down.
Slows everything down.
I think what if we were all looking to the horizon or if we're shooting for the stars, we grab a tree branch now, you know?
Yeah.
Hold on to something. But, you know, humans bounce back. America bounces back, you know? So I hope this is a big wake-up call for everybody, you know?
If we paid attention to history, we would have known that, you know, in 1918 stuff, they talking about the flu. And in 1919, they actually canceled the Stanley Cup. That's a good 30 for 30 because everybody got this particular flu that year was killing young people and healthy people at an alarming rate. And even during game five, they canceled game five Stanley Cup because they only had two players who could play and one coach died. Two players died, one coach died, and the team had only three players that could play in the fifth game or some shit.
Yeah, I think we've learned a little bit from there. But again, like what happens if you just will the NBA, when will they play the rest of that playoffs? Like what, you know, like, and will baseball just like miss a year? And I think, you know, we'll really see how serious, like football is the pillar of American sports, whether people like it or not. So what happens if football is canceled?
Because everything else had a strike before. Baseball's had a strike. Football had a strike, but they had fucking players coming there, the scabs. So what if you get just
by the way, scabs? Great 30 to 30, the year of the scab. That's a great one.
That might have been one of the greatest ones.
And by the way, because of our film, it helped add oxygen to the argument that those players should get Super Bowl rings.
Which and they should.
So we always talk about, like, when you talk about a documentary that impacts the world in a real world, like, that's kind of the dream. So
I was shocked that those players didn't get a ring. And I think with the rest of Americans, we was like, that's fucked up because they kept that team in the playoffs by going 2-0.
That's right.
They kept them in the playoffs. Without them, they wouldn't even been there. It's like you should have gave them your ring.
Exactly.
The Redskins do so many things wrong.
They're called the Redskins. I would say they did a lot of things wrong.
They are just the worst. And these guys played their fucking hearts out and beat the guy. I forgot. See, I'm a Cowboy fan too. Jeffro Pugh is my cousin. He played on a team in the 70s. That's why I grew up in New York, but I'm a Cowboy fan. I'm always going to explain that to people. But when they beat the Cowboy regular squad, and I wasn't even thinking, like, because the Cowboys team wasn't playing as a team because some had jumped the strike early. Some So they came in like this, fuck you, fuck you. They wasn't even a full squad. But the Redskins, they all they had. They knew that was their last game. They ain't playing no more. And it's hard to be. And that's a feel-good story. Where's that movie? They should make a fucking scripted movie from that.
Well, didn't they? Isn't Keanu Reeves the star of that movie?
Oh, The Replacements?
Yeah. Gene Hackman, that's a classic good bad movie. I love that one.
That is a great movie, though. It's a great movie, but it's not really showing that these, like, how these guys just came together, had nothing, had people throwing bottles at them, shaking a bus, punching through the bus. They think they're getting shot after the game.
Which is also great. Like, who was doing that?
Like, dudes with head injuries that you can't say no to. I mean, it was unbelievable. That was really one of the great ones. Because I think some of the best 30s for 30s is when it's not sports. It's not a sports thing. It's a not sports thing.
And that's what we look for. In the end of the day, like, I just want a great story that happens to take place within sports.
Right.
And that's how we think about it as well. And the other cool thing is, like, all right, you're a huge fan, but I guarantee you there's 40 or 50 30 for 30s you haven't seen.
Yeah.
You know, there's a lot of deep cuts in there that are great that people haven't seen as much of, or, you know, a lot of times they only play the really, really popular ones.
Right.
But there's a ton there, and they're all on ESPN Plus, including all the shorts. So
I got the shorts. I go bang, bang. I go each episode. I don't skip none of them shits. I try to watch every one that I can. Definitely in this quarantine time, I've been knocking them down.
Well, get ready for this year. We're about to, you know, starting with Jordan, and then we're going to announce a couple more. So it's going to be a good year for 30 for 30s among, you know, all this pause. And, you know, hopefully that will give people, you know, a measure of regularity.
Congratulations. Y'all doing a great job over there, man. I'm a big, big, big fan.
We appreciate your consumption. We appreciate your enthusiasm.
Yes. Now, Adam, at this point, we're about to end it up, but at this time of the show, we try to talk about, we just mentioned something in your life. We call it cutting down the nets. You know, when at the end of the championship, you cut down the net. So something in your life that is a cut down the net situation. It could be sports related or not sports related, like something you're proud of that you want to cut the nets down to.
That's a good one. You know, I'm gonna lean into these times. You know, my mom is an epidemiologist and infectious disease doctor.
Whoa.
You know, and she recently retired, but has been helping out on the front lines of answering questions. And so, you know, again, it might be trite, but I think we can't say it enough. Like, anybody who's helping out and is part of the solution, whether it's manufacturing stuff or healthcare worker or delivery worker, like, to me, like, that's the new working class. Working class to me is the people who show up when no one else wants to show up. So I think a doctor is working class, delivery worker is working class. Like, that's the real thing. So hats off to the working class and keeping the rest of us safe.
I agree. Let's cut down the nets to everybody who's out there helping the mankind and humanity keep going. Yeah. Now, can you tell the fans where they can reach you, like Instagram or something like that? And when the show's premiere, the Jordan Doc.
Jordan Doc premieres April 19th. You can find me on LinkedIn, Adam Newhouse. There you go. And then on Instagram, it's Newhouse, Neuhaus. Keep watching ESPN. We appreciate it.
Dope, Adam. I can't thank you enough for coming on the show, man. We love you here at Small Ball.
Appreciate it, Rob.
Thank you, brother. Peace out.